Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday to you out there in the Central Valley and possibly beyond. You can catch my show every Saturday morning, 10 to 12 here, Pure High School Sports all the time. Just have a lot of fun highlighting the teams and wonderful athletes up and down the Central Section, all the way from the coast to Bakersfield up to Chowchilla as well. The huge focus here in the Clovis and Fresno area. Thanks, you guys, for tuning in every Saturday. This is a ton of fun. I love to be on the air and talk to different coaches and talk to players and talk to media personalities. I hope you guys enjoy it, too. You can follow me on the Twitter, at Palmeadors, PaulMeadors. You can also follow the station at 1430 ESPN. Well, for the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking about Pure High School Sports. After the break, talking with Gabe Camarillo, as always. Love talking with Gabe. He's on assignment right now. He's not on the board today, but we're going to be chatting with Gabe about baseball. We'll be talking with former Clovis West Girls All-Star basketball player and soon-to-be USC grad, Maddie Campbell. She had an incredible career at Clovis West. Got to follow her from her freshman year to her senior year. Went to USC. And I got to be honest, this is going to be a very, very detailed and in-depth conversation because I'm sure she'll be the first to admit it. Her college career was derailed by injuries, and it was sad. She had a couple back surgeries. It was, I'm sure, not the college experience that Maddie Campbell was looking forward to. But, you know, she is a strong, strong person. She had an incredible career. Dad, you know, is the head basketball coach at Clovis West. They've had a lot of success. So really, really looking forward to talk to Maddie. She's on spring break right now and lucky enough to have her on the show. Looking forward to that. We're all at the top of hour number two. We're going to be talking with Bullard baseball coach Tom Donald. You know him. He had a wonderful, successful career at Buchanan before moving over to Bullard. His Knights are currently 12-3 on the season. They just won the Baseball Easter Classic. And at the bottom of hour number two, speaking of Buchanan, we got their shortstop, J.P. Acosta. He's headed to Long Beach State. He was named MVP of the Easter Classic, even though Buchanan didn't win it. Buchanan they scored a lot of runs in that tournament, but lost the first game, didn't make it to the championship game. And you mentioned, too, the Bullard beat Redwood in a crazy game, 5-3 in the championship game. Looking forward to talk to Tom about that, talk to Gabe about that game as well. But J.P. Acosta, wonderful baseball player, just a slick fielding shortstop. You know, had a lot of colleges after him, chose Long Beach State. I think his junior year is when he decided on that. Could have been a sophomore year. Looking forward to talking to JP at the bottom of hour number two. Want to thank First String Sports. That's where I do my show live every Saturday. Like I said, 10 to 12. First String Sports, they're my day one sponsors. Love these guys. This is my second year doing the show. Every show has been from this location. Come on down here on Blackstone. You know where it is, right? In between Sierra and Herndon Avenues. Also want to thank Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the show as well. Give those guys a call whenever you have some plumbing and heating needs. Guys, tomorrow's Easter. It's crazy, right? Just had spring break. I'm a teacher, so I had a full week off. You know, I woke up with a little bit of anxiety this morning. I mean, I usually do when I have my show, but because there are a lot of projects that I wanted to do throughout the house, and I guess the bulk of them done. There were a few that, well, I needed a power washer. I didn't have access to a power washer. If I had a power washer, I could have done, got a lot accomplished during my spring break, but I didn't. But, you know, I did get to go with my family to go watch the Oakland A's play the Anaheim Angels. And I got to see Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani hit back-to-back homers. That was on the Sunday game. And it was quite an event. You know, I mean, Mike Trout, obviously an amazing player in Ohtani. I don't know, you can make an argument that Shohei Ohtani is the greatest baseball player of all time. What he's doing on the mound and hitting is remarkable. It's never been done before. You could compare him to Babe Ruth, right? Babe Ruth didn't do both at the same time. I mean, his hitting prowess and his pitching prowess, you know, were at different times start off as a pitcher, but Ohtani's doing it at the same time. Amazing. To see those guys hit back-to-back homers was absolutely remarkable. I want to mention, too, I was talking to a friend last night who was traveling, down south, and he traveled yesterday. Be careful out there on the freeways. There is lots of potholes and just hazards all up and down the state due to the rains. We drove to Oakland, and from Oakland we went to Santa Cruz, and Santa Cruz back home, and we ran into a lot of traffic. It's kind of ugly out there, so be very, very careful. Slow down, avoid those big potholes. There's a lot in the freeways, so be very, very careful with that. We want to mention that to you guys. Bullard, you know, had that championship game. We're going to be talking with Tom Donald on that, and the Fresno Easter Classic was a great success. Had Jason Pappy on the show last week, and all the what goes on into running a tournament of that magnitude is incredible. Jason Pappy, kudos to him and his staff for putting together a phenomenal tournament. I believe at one point there were seven different sites that the tournament was played on. Bullard beat Redwood in a classic. They played the championship game at Clovis East. And there was another wild and wacky championship game that was played in the central section that I have to mention. I have to. It was played in the South Valleys between Tulare Western and Centennial Bakersfield. It was part of the Pro PT Invitational. The final score was 17-16 in 8 innings. I'm going to bring up the box score here on Max Preps. I'm a big stats guy. I want you guys just to get a little bit of a feel of how wild and wacky this championship game was. All right, so let's fast forward to the third inning. It was 6-1. Tulare Western was on top. Centennial got 2 runs in the top of the fourth. All right, 6-3. What's Centennial doing in the top of the fifth inning? They put up a 10 spot. 10 runs in one inning. All right, so now it's 13-6. Centennial's think, all right, we're going to be cruising. Shut out Tulare Western in the bottom of the fifth. Got tacked on another run in the top of the sixth. So now let me add these up. So now it is 14-6. Centennial is winning. What does Tulare Western do in the bottom of the sixth? Well, they go ahead and put up a 10 spot themselves. So now they're winning. Centennial scores 2 in the seventh to tie it. So it's 16-16. Pitching is definitely, I mean, they're probably just going to guys that have thrown 2 or 3 innings all year. Tulare Western gets shut out in the bottom of the seventh. Like I said, top of the eighth, Tulare Western, bottom of the seventh, gets shut out. Top of the eighth, Centennial puts up a 0. Tulare Western wins it on an Ethan Ortega walk-off RBI single. Final score, 17-16. So wild and wacky stuff down there in the South Valley. Congrats to Tulare Western. I was able to check out the Kingsburg at Fowler championship game of the Fowler Easter Classic. Fowler looked really, really strong. We've talked a lot about Kingsburg. I had Houston and Holden Hirschhorn on the show last week. The twins, they're juniors. Their dad, Oscar, is the head coach at Fresno Pacific University. Fowler looked really good. They beat him, like I said, 10-2. Jared Bubba Smith, he looked great on the mound. Threw 5 1/3 innings, only gave up 3 hits, 1 earned run, struck out 7. Peyton Garcia was named the tournament MVP. Bubba Smith's a really, really good pitcher. We got to watch him throw the football around. He was the quarterback for the football team in the Justin Garza playoff game, and he can sling it. That dude is a really, really good athlete. So congrats to Fowler on that. Houston Hirschhorn in that game went 2 for 3 with an RBI. I want to mention a few shining stars. In basketball, we had our, you know, it seems like basketball was a while ago. It was, but Cal High Sports does an incredible job highlighting players throughout the state with their rankings as well. A couple stat stars that I want to mention: Tunde Yasufu of St. Joseph. He was named the Cal High Sports Sophomore of the Year, and of course he should. He averaged almost 28 points a game, almost 11 rebounds, a couple of assists. You know, they made it to the CIF Open Division State Championship game and lost to Harvard Westlake. Just an incredible season for Tunde. He's going to be a high-level D1 recruit. He already is. He has a lot of offers. But, hey, when those Kentuckys and Kansases, when they start, you know, throwing him a scholarship, I think that's going to come one day. Mike Davis Jr. was named the D2 State Player of the Year of San Joaquin Memorial, D2 State Championship. The first in school history. So good job by Cal High Sports to recognize a couple of our players. And we stick with Cal High Sports a little bit as well. I want to mention Maddie Ray. She is a softball player at Clovis West, committed to play softball at Fresno State. She was named Cal High Sports standout, NorCal standout softball player of the week. She had a couple home runs and had 8 RBIs in a 12-1 win over Buhack Colony of Atwater. She's hitting 419 on the season, leading the team in home runs and RBI. She's having an incredible year for Clovis West. And, you know, Kingsburg's making the news again. They have a freshman. They have a freshman stud softball player, Jocelyn Gonzalez. She's becoming quite the star this season. And one of the reasons she opened up eyes all over the Central Section because she hit a home run off Clovis North ace Ryan Maddox. Clovis North ended up winning the game 6-5, but she had a huge home run in that game. They had to go extra innings, talking about Clovis North to beat Kingsburg in softball. Again, she's a freshman. This girl is making waves. She, on the season, she has 6 home runs, 25 RBIs, 26 hits. So congrats to Jocelyn Gonzalez on being recognized by Cal High Sports. Incredible season. So there's a little bit of a wrap-up on some of the good things that are happening up and down the Central Section in sports. When we come back after break, we'll be talking with Gabe Camarillo about what he saw at the Easter Classic. He was able to check out a couple games. I know the baseball rankings are up on Max Preps. Always fun to talk about different teams up and down the Central Section. So Gabe Camarillo coming up after the break on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
10:22, Saturday morning. I'm your host, Paul Metters. This is the Central Valley Sports Report. 1430 ESPN here at First String Sports. Want to bring on Gabe Camarillo. Gabe Camarillo is on assignment right now. You know him as the host of Home Field Advantage, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5. You can follow him on the Twitter machine at Gabe Camarillo _. Does a great job. Gabe, I mentioned in my opener about the great Fresno Easter Classic headed up by Jason Pappy of Fresno High and that great Bullard and Redwood game. And you and I were able to go to the Fowler and Kingsburg game as well. I mentioned that great game. That was fun to watch those two teams battle out. But, you know, the Fresno Easter Classic is quite an event. And I think at one point there were seven different sites. It's just a massive event. There's the dinner that they do on Sunday night with the coaches, and that's always a really good time. But what stood out to you in the Fresno Easter Classic? Not only that championship game between Bullard and Redwood, we'll be talking with Tom Donald at the top of hour number two about that game, but what stood out to you most during that tournament? And the weather was great as well, though.
The parity reigned supreme. Chowchilla got off to a 2-0 start. He had those Palos win a couple games. I like how there are 36 teams, but all 36 teams had something to be proud of walking away. I know Hoover had a no-hitter on the last day of the Fresno Easter Classic, and I'm really excited for Davey Jones and his guys. So I think what stood out to me the most, Paul, was the parity in the Fresno Easter Classic that showed itself in the championship game, because all season long the media pundits have had Bullard at number one, but Redwood was really good and really pushed them for 5.5 innings.
No, yeah, for sure. And I know that Bullard needed that great rally in the bottom of the sixth inning to come back. And, you know, I feel like there, you know, you're right, Gabe. There was a lot of parity. I'm not quite sure how many teams went 3-0 in that. And, you know, the tiebreakers, you know, had Bullard and Redwood go to that championship game. But, you know, I know just how much effort and time that the event, you know, takes. What sense of camaraderie and, you know, the sense of community did you have during that tournament? How cool was it to see some of these teams that might not be able to see each other as well? Some teams coming from out of state in that tournament as well.
Yeah, I saw one of those teams. Crater from Oregon made the trip down to Fresno, and I saw them take on Kerman. It was an easy walk from our ESPN studios. It just had to go across Palm Avenue to Bullard and check out that game. And you mentioned camaraderie and community. Kerman always brings that every game. I saw head coach Damon Jenkins out there. The football coach was out there cheering on a lot of his football players, because you got Adam Delgado in the outfield. You got Adrian Torres, a freshman starting. He's also the starting quarterback for the Lions. So you just, with Kerman specifically, but also other teams that I was able to see, I know Bullard had a big supporting crowd on that championship night. So did Redwood. This means a lot to these high school baseball teams. You know, the Fresno Easter Classic has been going on now for 53 years. It's built a reputation of its own. People really want to make it to that championship game. When you look at the program for the event, there's so many great teams on that list. There's so many great players that have won Most Outstanding Player and Most Outstanding Pitcher. And I know that J.P. Acosta, you're going to have him on the show later today. He had a fantastic Easter Classic performance. Big part why he is named MVP of this year's Easter Classic.
Yeah, that was a little surprising to people where JP won the MVP award and Buchanan didn't make it the championship game. I think that shows just what an incredible tournament that JP had in the Fresno Easter Classic. Gabe, you and I were able to check out the Kingsburg and Fowler championship game. It was a great event, you know, all through the weekend, and they played the week before as well. And Bubba Smith is a very impressive sophomore for Fowler, and you and I were chatting while watching him play. He threw a lot of sliders, a lot of off-speed pitches. His fastball had some get-up as well. We were impressed. We're like, man, this kid could pitch at any level. He's good.
You know, we talked about multi-sport athletes like Adrian Torres of Kerman, but put Bubba Smith on that list because I think he's a three-sport athlete. He's a football quarterback. He is a really good player on the hardwood. I talked to his teammate, Peyton Garcia, on my show, and he's like, yeah, Bubba goes hard in the paint. You know, he is a gamer in basketball, and he's a gamer in baseball as well. So Bubba Smith, when you're at Fowler High or, you know, other small schools, you kind of have to put on multiple hats, and Bubba Smith does it so well. You're absolutely right, Paul. That breaking ball can strike out just about anybody in the Valley, I would say.
Yeah, it had a lot of bite to it. And, Gabe, we've talked about ad nauseum the base divisions in football and basketball. We've even mentioned on air, man, we're getting a little sick of talking about this. However, I want to mention this really quick, Gabe, and you and I done some predictions about who's going to be playing in Division 1, 2, and 3. Gabe, Hoover, Emmanuel, I'm looking at Division 4 teams. Hoover, Emmanuel, Kennedy, and then there's Kingsburg, and then there's Fowler as well. I thought they were base Division 3 teams, but they're base Division 4. Most likely they'll be up in Division 3. We're thinking, yeah, there might be Kerman and Kingsburg and these teams in Division 2, but no, they could only move up one division.
The crazy thing, too, is, Paul, in the Max Preps rankings, Kingsburg's number 3 overall in the section, and they're right behind Stockdale. And I want to say, you probably have it in front of you, Stockton and Bullard at the top, and then you got to Kingsburg. And Fowler's in the top 20. So when Fowler beat Kingsburg 10-2 earlier this week to win their home tournament, by the way, that's back-to-back-to-back titles for the Redcats in their home Easter Classic, that's a huge win. That's beating a top-3 team that Max Preps views as being similar to a Stockdale and Bullard. So, hey, give the Redcats their flowers. They beat a really good Kingsburg team. They beat them convincingly. I know the Vikings had a couple mistakes that they would like back, but, hey, that's baseball, and the Redcats play it very well.
No, they did, yeah. And I just hit refresh on the old Max Preps rankings. It says last updated on the 6th, which would have been 2 days ago. Bullard is the top at number 1, and then Kingsburg is at 2, which is strange. Stockdale is at 3, Bakersfield Christian 4, Frontier 5. Then you got Buchanan at 10-7 is 6. And then Cambrillo of Lompoc is 14-2, and they're at 7. Dos Palos is at 8. I'm going to talk about them really, really quick after I go over some of these. Lemoore is number 9, and there's Redwood of Visalia at 10. Then you got Clovis, Tulare Western, Kerman, Clovis West. There's Fowler at 15. I might as well go ahead and do all 25. Then you have Madera at 16, Rigetti at 17, El Diamante 18, Pioneer Valley 19, Liberty Madera got a really good team at 20, Aurora Grande, Central Fresno, Centennial Bakersfield, Liberty of Bakersfield. That's strange to see those two teams at 23 and 24. Then St. Joseph at number 25. But I want to mention too, Gabe, Dos Palos. All right, so they're ranked number 8 in Max Preps. We know they're not going to be a D1 or D2 or D3 school. They're a 10-2. I looked at their strength of schedule. It's only a 2.9, but their last 3 wins, Gabe, I think people are going to be impressed by this. They beat Hanford 1-0. They beat Edison 10-1, and they beat San Joaquin Memorial 9-6 a few years ago. Did you ever think the Dos Palos would beat San Joaquin Memorial in baseball? But they did 9-6. I mean, good job by the Broncos there in Dos Palos. Out of all those rankings, obviously they're a little, you know, they're done by the computer. They're not done by, you know, by humans like you or I. And I know you do a great job with the rankings. You can check them out on 1430 ESPN Fresno. But anything stand out to you? I know that Clovis is, they've really turned some heads. They're number 11, but Clovis and, you know, Buchanan, they're going to be playing here this week, I believe, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Clovis and Clovis West play the final week, but you got I mean, Clovis West, Clovis East, you got Buchanan Central, and you got Clovis North this upcoming week. No, Paul, the thing I like about the rankings you just said, it's parity. I mean, Dos Palos is number 8. How about that team led by the Broncos, led by their head coach, Leonard Davis, who played pro baseball? He's one of the very few that could say he was an expo and a national. Leonard Davis coming back home, leading Dos Palos to what is now a really good start. I mean, 3 wins in the Fresno Easter Classic is impressive. But if you include a win over San Joaquin Memorial in that sentence, and a big win over Edison, those are two CMAC teams. And also, don't forget that earlier this year, Dos Palos beat Madera, and Madera is widely considered to be the second-best team in CMAC behind Bullard. So they've already beaten three CMAC teams. We're talking about Dos Palos. Absolute great job by the Broncos and their head coach, Leonard Davis.
No, absolutely. And let me just look really quick here. So Dos Palos is a base Division IV. So if they are ranked higher, they're going to be moving up to Division III. Man, it sounds like shaping up like Division III is going to be a loaded bracket come playoff time. But we still have a lot of baseball left. And, Gabe, thanks for jumping on. I really appreciate it. And, yeah, have a great Easter, my friend.
All right, you too, Paul. Always a pleasure.
Always a player. That was Gabe Camarillo. You can listen to his show Monday through Thursday, Home Field Advantage. Coming up after the break, we have former Clovis West basketball standout, USC Trojan, Matty Campbell on 1430 ESPN. Pure High School Talk here. Well, kind of Pure High School Talk. I like to advertise that, and I'm bringing on somebody that that I have known for a while. You know, there's these certain athletes that you cover for a long time, and you follow their careers, and you get to know their parents, and you get to know them as well on and off the court. And I got one of them here with us today. Matty Campbell played basketball at Clovis West, a four-year starter, four Central Section championships, you know, that national and state number one in 2017, scholarship to USC. We're going to be getting into a lot of stuff with Matty, but you are one of those players, student athletes that I could probably consider you a friend, right? Even though you're out of high school and you're about to graduate here, but follow your career for a long time, and I wanted to have you on the show for a while, and spring break is a perfect time to do it. You're off right now, so yeah, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
Coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
Maddie,
thank you so much for having me.
No, you bet. And Easter's tomorrow. And I know you got a very tight family. Your dad's a basketball coach at Clovis West. You got any Easter egg stories growing up? Did you search for that golden egg with maybe money in it or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, that always happened. But I would say the most memorable one was my twin brother and I would always fight to have the most eggs. And it was always a competition with anything we did growing up. So now we have two little ones, and that was something we had to adjust to, of like, okay, let them win this time, you know. So that was a fun memory growing up, is just the competitive Easter egg hunts.
Did you have a little basket with the green fake grass in it?
Yes.
And everything?
Yes, the tassel.
So were the eggs hard boiled eggs, or were they plastic eggs with candy and maybe money in it, or is it a mix of both?
Usually plastic eggs. We would still dye eggs, but with the competition, you would end up crushing them when you grab them.
Well, I remember growing up, I grew up in Dinoba, and my grandparents lived out in the country on a farm. And I didn't have a very big family. I had two first cousins, so there was like four of us boys. And it was the best to hunt Easter eggs on a farm in this old rickety house. But you kind of knew the spots, right? If you were smart enough, you're like, yeah, grandpa or grandma usually hides one here.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, boom. And there was always the search for that golden egg. And back then, it was a 50-cent piece, right? Now it was probably like $5, $10 bills.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the big deal was a 50-cent piece
50
in the golden egg. so, yeah, the Easter, lots of tons of memories about that.
Yeah.
I want to start with now, Matty, and work back a little bit. You mentioned on social media that you were medically retiring from basketball due to countless injuries and two spinal surgeries.
Yeah.
Serious, serious stuff you put out there. You know, was that a difficult post to make after all you've been through physically, or was it sort of a release for you to announce that, to let that go?
Yeah, I think it was a post I've been anticipating for a while. It was something that it lifted a weight off my shoulders. It felt good to finally get it out there, because it's been a long time coming. I haven't played a game since December of 2021, so it's crazy to really say that out loud, because you don't really think about it a lot. But yeah, it felt good to get it out there and to kind of announce my life as a normal human being finally. So it feels good. And I've made very much, you know, peace with the whole situation. And while it sucks a little bit, it's my life. And I had a great run when I was healthy. So that's what you got to continue to tell yourself.
So speaking of the surgeries, what was the timeline of the surgeries, or when was your latest surgery?
My latest surgery was June 24th, this past summer in 2022. And then my first one was December 2019, freshman year of college.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how did the doctors describe those surgeries? What exactly did they have to do?
So the first one was a microdiscectomy, which they go in through the back and they just shave off the little part that's herniated. It was a massive herniation. I was almost left paralyzed. And so I'm kind of shocked at how minimally invasive the surgery was. So I left feeling great. Surgery and recovery went great. And then no traumatic incident happened, just kind of came back. And that's what happens sometimes with surgeries. And then 2 years later, a relapse happens, and this time it's times 10. It's two herniated discs, degenerative discs, torn discs. Like, how does a disc tear? I don't know. And then degeneration, which I don't even, stenosis, literally the whole list. So they said XYZ surgeries won't cover it, so either you heal on your own or you're done, and that wasn't good enough for me, as most athletes would agree. So I kind of sought out my own help outside of USC, and they basically told me, Dr. Rasuli told me that he would do a two-level artificial disc replacement. So that made me happy. Most people were like, oh, shoot, you know, but that made me happy because for the first time in, I don't know, like 3 months, I finally felt hope in the process, and whether I come back and play or not, that was my goal at the time, but whether I come back and play or not, I can be healthy and I can feel good, and physical health was my main priority. And so, yeah, two-level artificial disc replacement.
Talking with Maddie Campbell right now, a career at Clovis West, great basketball career, and then USC. So the last time you saw the court was in 2021?
Yep.
You know, basketball's in your blood, and you're competitive, and I'm sure you had, a lot of high hopes. You mentioned that you finally
Absolutely.
Had hope after a while. So when you think about college and all you've been through, you know, what was giving you the most amount of hope during those times? Was it like, I want to see the court again. I just want to get healthy again. I just want to live a normal life. You know, what do those times look like exactly?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the whole time it was, oh, I'm going to get back out on the court and I'm going to, you know, they always say the comeback is stronger than the setback. And it sounds cliche, but it's true most often than not. But I would say that second back surgery was the most humbling experience physically of my life. I was sitting in bed on bed rest. People had to physically take care of me. People had to lift me up to sit, to stand, to lay down in bed, to get up from bed. So I couldn't do anything on my own for about a week. And that right there, I'm like, you know, I don't want to go through this again. I want to be able to run with my future kids. I want to have an active lifestyle. I'm now working out 4 times a week, 5 times a week, and it feels really good. And who am I to even jeopardize that? So this past year has been a lot of growing up for me and realizing that, okay, I haven't been 100% in going on 5 years. So even if I were to come back, then, you know, I'd be working at about 60%. And that's not how I want my career to be remembered.
And you did, I remember, Maddie, that first game, USC coming in as a freshman, and the opportunity is there, and you scored 19 points.
Man.
And how many threes did you hit in that game, 3 or 4?
Five. I think, yeah.
Shorted you a couple. Yeah, you know. I remember watching that game and seeing the highlights and like, yeah, that's Maddie Campbell. What was that moment like for you, thinking back at that, scoring those 19 points in your first game as a freshman?
It felt good. It felt really good. When you're a redshirt freshman, you are a sponge. You take a lot in and you wait, okay, when is it my turn? Like, I can't wait for it to be my turn. You're happy for your teammates, but you're like, I'm ready for it to be my turn. And so when it's your turn, you gotta turn up.
Yeah.
And it felt good. I felt like myself again, not fully, but, you know, scoring 19 points, that's pretty close to what it used to be. And it may not look like the same old scoring, like I wasn't a full 3-level scorer in that game, but that's okay. I was scoring and it felt good.
What's something about the college game that most people don't know about, you know, the grind of it, or balancing classes and just the level of competition? What's, you know, if maybe even if you were, you know, if there were listeners out there that were like, I want to play D1 basketball, you know, boys or girls or women's or men's. I mean, what's something that the common person doesn't know about that level of competition, what it takes?
You can't just like it. You have to love it. you have to love it so much that you can't picture yourself not doing it. Coming home during the pandemic, during COVID, my parents finally saw how busy you are with school and being a student athlete. And that was omitting the workout, the lift, the all of that, like the tutoring, the classes, the meetings, everything. They're like, oh my gosh, we never see you. I'm like, yeah, this is college. So it's something that you really have to be so passionately in love with to pursue it for 4 years plus.
Talking with Maddie Campbell. All right. College degree, are you on track? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I'm graduating in a month with a degree in communications from the School of Annenberg, USC. So it feels great. I'm like, what the heck, where did these years go? But yeah, I'm so excited.
So what do you want to do with that degree?
I'm not sure. I just have so many passions that I don't know what to do. I could go sports broadcasting. I could go photography, sports or not. I could do so many things in sports, like sports management, sports administration. I don't know. So I'm going to take the next 1 or 2 years to figure out before I fully jump into career.
How about this? You can move back to Fresno, get an intern, hang out with us at 1430 ESPN, get you on the mic, get you on the radio, and then we'll take it from there. All right. There we go. We got that going on. All right. I want to mention this too a little bit, Maddie, and I'd love to have your opinion. You know, the women's college basketball game got a huge boost last weekend. The women's Final Four was incredible. That national championship game, Iowa's Caitlin Clark, made a lot of news for her incredible scoring ability. I got to admit, I first saw her in the tournament. I was like, man, this she can play ball.
She's the
absolutely
real deal.
And a little bit of controversy, but I just want your opinion on this. Reese of LSU in the final seconds made that gesture, was it you don't see me, right? And she was doing that, or Caitlin Clark was doing that, but I don't think she was doing that necessarily to other players during the game, just doing it. And then a little bit of controversy with that, how she went up and for the last 15 seconds was doing that. And Twitter does what Twitter does, and back and forth commentary, and you hear the talking heads as well. But what's your opinion about, is that too far, or, are you fine with that? Where is the line drawn, respecting the game and all that? Seeing probably everything under the sun, what's your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, playing it myself, I've heard it all, I've seen it all, dished it out a couple myself, but I'm torn. I have two very conflicting ideas of all publicity is publicity, period, for women's basketball, and I think it's good to grow the game, and I think it's good, like, people talking about women's basketball, whatever it is, people are talking about it. But on the other hand, I think there is a fine line between A and B. I think people try to bring the discussion of race into this conversation. Some are, abusing that, but I don't think it's about race here. I think it's about an instance of, oh, you don't see me, or on the free throw line, I even thought was fine because that's just like normal trash talk. Men do it all the time. But I think the clock ticking down in the last seconds, I think that was a little much for me. And I think that's where it crosses the line of sportsmanship. And people have their ideas, people have their opinions, but that's how I feel about it. I think trash talk is fine, but when it gets to taunting and just unnecessary behavior, I think that's when I kind of am like, okay, that's a little much. And you think about the little girls watching, and you don't want them to emulate that. You don't want them to be doing that to people. Like, that's just not cool, in my opinion. So I think, that's just how I feel. It's very conflicting, but
I agree. I think the line was a little bit too far on that, and I know you got to respect the game and respect your opponents. That's one thing that I loved about watching your games at Clovis West. Win or lose, you guys didn't lose very often, right? But win or lose, you guys would always get straight into that handshake line, shake their hands, look them in the eye, and I always loved that about Clovis West. You guys won a lot of games, and the 2017 season was my favorite team to cover in all my years covering high school sports. What are your main memories, main takeaways from those years at Clovis West? What do you miss most? What were your favorite times during those years?
I have so many. For one, I still talk to almost all of the players today. Like, we just have such good relationships and so much love for all of them. The most memorable game was the state championship game when we won my sophomore year. We weren't supposed to win, and we did. So that was something I'm going to tell my kids and my kids' kids about, So that was something that we put Clovis West officially on the map. My senior year, my last game, should have won that game, and it's tough, but those are learning moments.
Talking about the Sierra Canyon game.
Yeah.
At Buchanan.
Yeah.
Which was
that
a
was just
strange event.
A crazy situation. I mean, there were so many fun times, even the tournaments in Arizona and Phoenix, and we're just doing dumb stuff in the hotel room, like eating goldfish and playing Uno, and people are making rap battles, and people are making music videos, and it's so funny to look back on the memories and be like, what were we doing? Like, our seniors pranked us with goldfish. Like, they bought goldfish from Petco and brought them into our rooms and put them in our
sink.
Oh,
not the cracker goldfish, like real goldfish.
Oh, we were eating goldfish, but they also bought real goldfish.
Got it.
And it's just like, what the heck? Like, you just look back and you're like, what in the world was going on? It's just so funny. I have so many memories that I could go on and on and on about.
Talking with Maddie Campbell, former Clovis Swiss girls basketball player, going to graduate
yes.
in June with a degree in communications from USC. You know, your dad is the coach, very successful coach. Was it difficult being a coach's kid on a high-profile team, or did you absolutely relish those moments?
Both. It was so, so, so hard. And he even said after I graduated, he's like, you know, there's times when I felt like I was too tough on you, and I kind of regretted some of the things that, you know, I would say, or some, you know, just how tough I was on you. But I even said, I'm like, no, you know, because it made me who I am. And he said, I had a lot to prove about you, that, oh, you weren't just on the team as a freshman because you're my daughter, and you weren't starting as a sophomore because you're my daughter, that you deserved it. So I had to be extra hard on you, so people in practice and in the games, people in the stands could really understand that there's no favoritism going on. And he says to his players now, if you think I'm being tough on you, you should come to practice 4 years ago. You should see how tough I was, you know. And it was tough, and the moments we won together were so sweet, and I would do anything to go back and relive those once more. But I think people maybe don't give enough credit to how amazing it is to be a coach's kid, and just how rewarding it is. So I definitely think I wouldn't change it for the world.
Sure, it made you stronger, and yeah, in those moments, those daddy-daughter bonds are very, very special.
Yeah.
I can attest to those as well. Is it true, though, that he led to you, like, breaking your toe at home? What's up with that?
Dad, right. If you're listening to this, this is 100% the truth. Yeah, so we were washing dishes one night, and you know when you, like, take a towel and swing it, and, like, it makes, like, a whip?
Yeah.
He whipped me in the leg. And it hurt. And so I, like, splashed water on him. And he, like, keeps hitting me with the towel, and I keep splashing him. So finally, like, it's starting to hurt, right? And so I'm, like, running away from him. The water.
How old are you at this? You're in high school, right?
I think I'm, like, a junior in high school.
Okay.
So I'm, like, running from him. The water's still running. The dishes aren't, like, there's so much going on. The TV's on. The kids are yelling something. And he's chasing me with this towel. And if you know me, you know I'm a very naturally clumsy person, like one of the clumsiest I've ever witnessed. So I'm running, and I completely jam my toe on the high chair. Like, this toe immediately turns purple, black, blue, green, whatever color. And I'm, like, on the floor laughing, crying hysterically, just like, it's funny, but it hurts like crap. And he's like, oh, get up, you pansy.
Yeah,
and I'm like, no, 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 it hurts. It's broken. And he's like, oh, my gosh, you're so dramatic. And the next 24 hours, I'm like, it's broken, it's broken. So, yes, long story short, went to the doctor, was told it's broken, and my father broke my toe.
Was it during basketball season?
It was actually right after.
It was right after.
Yes. So, thankfully, otherwise, he would have had to take the fall. No, I'm kidding. But, yeah. One of our many stories that we have to tell.
So your dad got hooked up with Michael Jordan camps in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And you have a Michael Jordan story. You were able to, right? You were able to meet him. And did he bring you out on the court?
Yeah.
Is that true?
He actually, like, picked me so many times. I had this strategy that I would wear bright shirts. So when I was, like, in the crowd, like, everyone's wearing white or black. Like, I'm wearing bright yellow, right? Or whatever it is, bright pink. And so he always picked me. So I actually have a lot of stories to tell. Like, there was one where I played one-on-one against him, and I made a shot, and he turns to me and goes, do you want me to dunk on you? I said, no, no. And then there was another one where there was like trivia, and it was about Space Jam, which is, that's my movie.
Yeah.
And this one girl got called out, and she had no idea. So they asked the first question. She doesn't know. So I'm yelling the answer. She hears me, and she says my answer, and it's right. Second time, she has no idea. She hears my answer again from the crowd, and it's right. The third one, they're like, okay, if you get this, you get a pair of shoes. And they ask her something. She has no idea. They're like, do you want to call a friend? I don't know this girl. And she goes, yeah, and calls me. I'm like, I hope this is right. And it's like, you know, it's right. So I sit down and she gets the shoes and I'm, or it's like a signed jersey or something from him. And so I sit down and I'm like, okay, that's fine. I don't care. And Michael Jordan personally comes over to me and is like, have you gotten a pair of shoes yet? And I was like, no. He's like, you just won yourself a pair of shoes. And that was so special to me because that's Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, like in the flesh and blood, who am I? I'm like a 10-year-old girl. And I'm just like, I don't know what I just did. And it's just something that my parents raised me with such, you know, intention, like pure intentions and good character, that it was something I did without even thinking. And it was just really cool in that moment. I told my dad and he's like, what? And I was just like, yeah, like he gave me shoes, you know, so it was cool. And Michael Jordan's such a great guy. Like, it was so cool to see that. But yeah.
Talking with Maddie Campbell here. We got another minute or so. Where are those shoes at right now? You still got them?
They're in my closet. Yeah, never wore them. Never.
You can't wear those.
No,
absolutely not. What? And there are obviously Jordans, right?
Yeah.
What style were there? What do they look like?
I don't even know.
They have any red in it?
There's some like black velvet something with gold. So I don't know. I'll get them signed someday.
All right, Maddie. We only got like 1 minute here, yeah. And you've been an incredible guest. It's been a pleasure and an honor to talk to you and follow your career. But yeah. Now, I want to ask you to end with this. How much did the game of basketball give to you, and how much do you plan on giving back to the game?
Oh, so much. The whole community of Fresno just absolutely took me in and just made me their own, and so grateful. And the game of basketball, you know, grew up playing it, grew up just dribbling any time I could think of. I would fall asleep on the floor of my dad's Saturday practices as a 7-year-old. So it was just something that I grew up loving. Unquestionably, I plan on giving back so much. That's why I want to still go into sports and be a mentor for young girls and young boys and just help people know the love that I know about basketball. So, yeah, that's what I plan on doing.
Amazing. Maddie, you've had an incredible career, and you mentioned the word mentor, and I have pictures of you with my daughters. They would go to the Clovis West girls basketball camp. So I really appreciate you. Thanks for coming on. This has been quite a pleasure, and I know whatever you decide to do in life, you're gonna have great success.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. That was an absolute blast. Thank you, Maddie. Coming up after the break, we'll be talking with Bullard baseball coach Tom Donald on 1430 ESPN.
High school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. That's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Number two, Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports. Come on down here, First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue. You guys know where it is. This is definitely the high school sports headquarters. I'm in the Letterman's Jacket Room. This is, I wouldn't want to do my show anywhere else. This room is amazing. Looking at Letterman's jackets. I mean, look at that. Looking right up Bullard. See Clovis High, Clovis East, even Parlier, San Joaquin Memorial, Liberty. I have Coach Tom Donald here. You guys know him. He's the head coach at Bullard. The Knights are currently 12-3, riding a 10-game winning streak where they've outscored opponents 93-10. It's the only research you're going to get here on the Central Valley Sports Report. They just won the Fresno Easter Classic on Thursday, an incredible 5-3 comeback win over Redwood. Coach Donald, thanks for coming in on this day before Easter, man. This is quite an honor for me. I got to be honest.
Well, it's more of an honor for me to be here. You know, anytime we can talk about the kids in the program, count me in.
How cool is this room?
Well, I tell you what, I've watched all these young men come in here and try on Letterman jackets, and I remember the day. Ooh, it was a while ago, 1981, but still, you know, it's really cool to see these guys come in here and do that.
And I asked you off air, because I didn't know what high school you graduated from. It surprised me when you said Redwood. You're a Visalia guy, South Valley guy, and you just beat the Rangers in that championship game. Oh, Redwood, how cool was it to play against those guys and coach against those guys?
Well, you know, it's not the first time I've coached against my alma mater, but at the same time, you know, before the game, both teams are there rather early, and there was a group of Redwood parents and whatnot up in the stands, and so I walked over in front of the stadium and said, "Hey, did you guys happen to bring any Taylor's hot dogs? It's a long-standing you know, hot dog place there in Tulare, I mean in Visalia." And they knew exactly what I was talking about, so they just started laughing. In fact, Dan Hydash, their coach, said, "I almost brought you Taylor's hot dogs
as a peace offering."
Yes.
So 1981. What were athletics like back then? Do you even? So were you playing? Was the league just the Mount Whitney?
Yes.
You know, and
West Yosemite. Yeah, West Yosemite League. It was Redwood, Whitney, Sanger. You know, schools like that. And I think Tulare Western was in that. Maybe they were in the EYL. But it was, you know, it was quite a bit different than it is today, right? The athletic landscape is a whole lot different where, you know, you didn't play travel baseball. It wasn't even a thing, you know. And when it was high school baseball season, that's when you played. And then when that was over, then you started getting ready for football all summer. You know, you didn't hardly even play any high school baseball in summer. So, a lot different.
No, I agree. Talking with Tom Donald, you know, travel baseball has obviously changed the landscape a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know your Buller team is on quite a winning streak right now, the 10 games like I mentioned. But, you know, what's the reason for this really good stretch of baseball that you guys are playing? Those three losses you have on mm-hmm. the year were when you went up north, three consecutive losses, reel yep. off those 10. So what's the reason for the turnaround?
I think that that three-game series up north was a learning opportunity. We went up there feeling pretty good about ourselves and actually got embarrassed. Humbled, I think, was another word I would use, in that we weren't quite ready for that level of baseball in terms of the intensity. Not that this isn't an intense group, but we faced some teams. One of them, you know, Valley Christian, ranked fifth in California, and you could tell just the way they carried themselves, the way they went about their in and out, the way they went about preparing themselves for the game. You could just tell, you know, that was a club that's experienced, is talented, literally 1 through 9. They had an athlete at each position, excuse me, and really well coached. And so it was good for us. You know, it changed us. It changed our personality as a club. In that we realized we've got work to do. We really do. If we're going to be relevant in the conversation of just being one of the better teams in the Valley, then we need to learn. We have to learn from this opportunity. And we did. I would say that the kids from that point on, we were different in that the way they approached the weight room, the way they approached practice daily, drills, there was a more intense environment. Not necessarily coming from me all the time, but from the kids themselves. And so I think that was probably something that turned us around as a club, because that's humbling to dump three games in a row. And, you know, a couple of those scores aren't really indicative of how we did. We should have won two of the three. We just didn't have any, you know, back-end pitching at the time that could really hold a lead. And so I think we've also turned the corner since then. You know, pitching wise too, we've created some depth, and which I think is going to help us, because I think most teams thought, you know, we're a one horse team, and I think this last even during the Easter tournament, we've proven that we've got some guys we can turn to, you know, and which is really great to see as a coach, you know, and I think it's going to help us.
Talk about how, you know, the in and outs, looking like a team, taking the game serious, right? How important is that as a coach, right? Just to look sharp. You mentioned now they had mm-hmm. athletes there. You're talking about Valley Christian, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. they had athletes. Why is all of that important?
You know, everybody talks about culture and developing culture, and culture is every day. It's everything you do. You know, when we talk about it, it's how we get after it in the weight room. It's how we show up dressed to the game and on time, and things like that. And so I think it's really important that kids understand, we don't talk about expectations, we talk about requirements. It's required that you do, and then you just fill in the blank, whatever we're dealing with that day. And it's important that we have a championship level mindset. You know, we're not going to just check the box. You know, it's just practice is a time to refine your skills. And it's not going to happen during a game. You have to prepare yourself. I know that sounds like a big cliche, but it's so true. It really is. You know, life is about repetition, and the game of baseball is about repetition. And there's confidence comes from repetition and knowing what you're doing. And I think myself as a coach, I had to step back a little bit and say, okay, what am I not doing that we dumped three games? And what you see, you know, is what you coach. And so we weren't real good on a couple bunt plays. We weren't really knowing what we're supposed to do on some of the offensive strategies. And so that's my fault. And I take 100% blame for that. You can't assume what kids know and what your players know. It's not important what I know. It's more important what they know, right? And so I had to kind of shuffle the deck a little bit for me and get back to basics, like, okay, this is how we run our bunt coverage. This is what you're expected to do on first and third defense. And so we went back to the drawing board, you know, and I think that's important. And I think it's showing now that we're doing that and kids buying in.
Did that mindset take a while for you to incorporate? I was on Gabe Camarillo's show last week, and you know we're talking about that and what you bring to a program. You know, you and I have had a lot of conversations, mm-hmm. even at Buchanan as well, and I mm-hmm. loved our conversations. But you know, was that what part of the mindset coming into Bullard? Hey, we're going to take care of the mental part, that part of the game, and the physical part will come later. Or did you try to intertwine those? What was that mindset like?
Yeah, I think, you know what, honestly, I just tried to, I don't want to say copy the formula, but doing what I knew worked over there, you know, at Buchanan. And so, you know, and it wasn't a far stretch to implement some changes within the Bullard community and the baseball program. You know, really, they were hungry for some wins. They were hungry for some discipline. They bought in terms of, you know, the expectation of, well, no, you're not going to go get a haircut today and miss practice. No, that's a non-negotiable. Or if you really feel it's that important, then you can sit on the bench next to me, you know, kind of thing. So we had to change the mindset a little bit. And I give credit to that first-year seniors, you know, the Bradys of Oryx and those, you know, and Cunningham and all those guys, you know, they just were nails. Or Cunnings, I'm sorry. And so I think it just takes time to develop a culture. And, what I'm starting to see now is that we're developing depth at Bullard. You know, and so we have some change, some pieces we can plug in, and you can't get too comfortable about your job because there is a guy that can take it from you. And we've got young guys that can step in, and they're doing a good job. And so, you know, and that's really – and it's not just good for the program, it's good for the kid. Because, you know, if you really want to be a next-level player, you've got to be able to, compete on a daily basis and win a job and keep your job.
How often, Coach, talking with Coach Tom Donald of Bullard, do you talk about the B that's on your chest, you know, the Bullard emblem,
yes.
The logo,
mm-hmm.
how you're representing yourself? How often do you talk about that with the kids?
Probably daily, you know, and it's not about just, you know, if I get an email or a phone call from maybe a teacher or a counselor or an adult on campus, and it's not like, hey, Bobby, the science player, it's Bobby, your third baseman, right? So you're labeled, and there's an expectation that comes with that. If you're at the Beer Rock shop and you're wearing your practice uniform, it's really important, or a hat. And if you're wearing RB, it's really important that you behave yourself and carry yourself in a way that is not going to detract from the tradition of the community and the program and what we're trying to do now. And so it wasn't this large leap, you know, because this is a very, very traditional community that loves baseball and loves to win and knows how to. And, you know, you talk about, come on, Mike Noakes, and he's right there on the bench. It's just a daily reminder of, you know, what Bullard Hardball is all about. And so it's not too hard, really, but we do talk about it a lot because I think kids have to be reminded.
And when you think of Bullard, you think about Bullard baseball, right? Mm-hmm. I graduated in the late '80s. We heard about Todd Johnson and the guys, mm-hmm. and those national number one teams, and those they were just dudes.
Yes,
they were just dudes. And I think Bullard has always had that. The look through the little league, and you know, Cal Ripken, whatever you want to call it now. Mm-hmm. There's always been baseball dudes at Bullard. Is it just been like, hey, I'm just coming in, I'm trying to provide the structure. The baseball players are there. You talk about depth as well, mm-hmm. but the baseball players are there, and the community support is absolutely there.
I would agree 100%. I've always said this from day one, how supportive the community has been, not just of the baseball program, but of me, you know, and the transition coming from another school. And so I feel like I'm in a great spot. I really enjoy working at Bullard High School. I really do. Armand Trigge, my principal, is just a tremendous leader for us, and he's really helpful with the baseball program and things like that. So Brandon Gilbert, my athletic director, just unbelievable guy. You know, just normal about the way he goes about his business and takes that really common sense approach to fill in the blank, whatever that might be. But I think that, you know, it's just, it's a really good place. It's, people, what I've learned is people that went to Bullard are proud to be from Bullard.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like an SC thing, you know, these SC alumni, you know, the alumnus, they're so proud to be an SC alumnus. People from Bullard are the same way. And so we're just, I think what we're trying to do is just bring some of that back, you know, and not that they weren't proud of the program before, because they were, but what we're hoping is just ratchet it up a level, you know.
How about lights? That's always a hot topic. What's the latest with light? I know.
Such a political hot button, you know. I think that community deserves lights. I really do. There's nothing like, can you imagine a Bullard Memorial game Friday night, 6:30 under the lights, a place that would be packed. You've got two big communities. Why wouldn't you want that? Why wouldn't you want kids to experience that? There's nothing better, you know, than that. Just the level of competitiveness between those two schools, you know, and the baseball's good, and you know the communities will show up, you know they will, and it's just great for kids to experience that in life. And you know, life is about experiences, and it, not that they're missing out, but they are missing out on some of those, you know, because over, you know, Clovis Unified has made that commitment to facilities, you know, and they're. Those games between, you know, when I was coaching at Buchanan, the games with the other Clovis schools, man, they were events.
Yeah.
You know, kids need to experience events, and I think we're missing out on that.
I think, Coach, too, you know, the sense of community in Bullard is very, very strong. I want to go back a little bit, Coach. It's been a great conversation so far. I want to ask you about the Redwood game, right? So 3-0,
mm-hmm.
you guy entering the sixth inning,
mm-hmm.
right? High-level game. Intense,
yeah.
Coaching against your alma mater, right? You guys are rolling right now. Entering the sixth inning, down 3-0, exploded for 5 runs, and then shut them out in the last inning. Talk about that game.
Well, I think you know you have to start with, you know, our guy on the mound, Keenan Gomez, you know, junior, really one of his first big starts, and he gets his first start as a championship game in the Easter Classic, which what I was told later is Bullard hadn't won an Easter Classic in almost like 19 years.
Oh, wow.
Which is surprising to me. I think they'd been in the final, but maybe hadn't won one. Anyway, somebody told me that night. But you start with Keenan Gomez and the tempo that he set on the mound and just did a great job. There's a kid that literally has grown up before my very eyes and the coaching staff's very eyes. It's a real tribute to his kind of staying with it. Because I would grind on him in terms of just, you need to grow up, right? And it's time to put your little boy ways away. And you're a junior in high school now, and there are certain demands and requirements that you have to bring to the table. And so he's really done a great job with that. I can't say enough about him and the player he's been for the last month for us and shoring up shortstop, you know, when we lost Zav. And that was, you know, you lose Beckett Zavoric. That's huge. So there's a guy that stepped in. But you start with him at that game, and then, you know, we kind of kicked the ball around a little bit early, which was uncharacteristic of us. We haven't made that many errors, I think, on the year. And I think we had like 6 in that game. A lot of extra opportunities. But he pitched his way out. We played a little bit better defense here and there. But I don't think there was any real sense of panic, you know, in the dugout. This is a team that enjoys competing. They really are. They're a great group of guys. They really are. And so I think it just, you know, it culminated in a belief in the team and the team itself. And then, the little dude that got the pinch hit base hit, you know, Wyatt Rosenthal, freshman, just came in there and delivered a huge hit. Can you
imagine, up the middle.
Can you imagine being 14 years old and you've got this on the line and he delivers the single that ties the game up, and then Cam Schneider comes up and I think he drove in a run as well. And so it was a great team win. I mean, it really was. You know, I was proud of the boys. They didn't quit. They really didn't. And I think one thing that might have to a little bit was that it's like, well, what do we got to lose? We're down three runs. We can get after it. It's about, you know, you have those talks in between innings, one guy at a time. Just get the next guy up. Just get the next guy up. Do your job. Get on base. Think one base at a time since we're chasing three and blah, blah, blah. So I just think it was the pressure offense.
And you have a horse, right?
Yes.
You do have a horse. Mm-hmm. And Cam Snyder, and you have Stubblefield. You got a lot of really good players.
Right.
Who are some other dudes that have really stepped up?
Well, I tell you what, you know, a guy that's I think has been lying in the weeds and is not as known as many as Jackson Murphy, our senior left fielder, lefty, you know, is getting some college attention now. But he is I have four valedictorians on the team. I don't even know how to spell valedictorian, but I have four of them, right? And so Jackson is one of them. And he's just an unbelievable kid. He works in the weight room. He stays out after practice and hits in the cages. So baseball's rewarding him for the work he's putting in. You don't always get rewarded, but he's getting rewarded right now. He's done a great job, Cam Snyder. You know, you got to you have to look at our catcher. Jake Porter's done a good job back there. Gannon Silva, you know, our first baseman, has been a bit of a surprise. He's offensive, and he's getting better defensively. Luke Beal, third baseman, that probably wasn't penciled in to be a starter at the beginning of the year, has been solid, you know, offensively and defensively. He keeps getting better. You look at Trevor Wilson. I mean, it all starts with our engine. I mean, he's our guy. You know, he is one of the premier players in the Valley, no doubt. One of the top. I'm going to give him – he's in the top 20, top 25 players in the state. I think he's that good. And what he brings to the table is, my goodness, an undeniable desire to win. He's crazy about winning. I mean, he will do whatever it takes. And so I can see him being a next-level player and hope, you know, if things go right and beyond, you know, for him. But, you know, he's been quite a guy. You know, Stubby, you know, you look at him, you know, Nick Stubblefield, just a tremendous athlete. You know, we get him going a little bit more. Offensively, and he's really going to be, because when he runs into a ball, it's just like, whoa, man, it just sounds different.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't play. And then you look at our new little upstart, little second baseman, Vincent Robinson, sophomore. You know, we weren't sure where he was going to be, where he's going to fit in the picture. We knew he's a varsity level guy, and he just keeps getting better, you know. And then, you know, you look at Sammy Reynolds, considered our number two senior, going on to college at York in Nebraska, just a workman, right? And he's just, the thing about Sammy too, he's really grown up as a young man, right? You do him. Aiden Weaver was a guy that came out of nowhere in the last couple outings and has been really good from the left side, and it's just been a lot of fun to watch him get better and compete. He's a valedictorian, as Sammy and Trevor, right? Those are the four. And so, let's see, am I leaving anybody out first? No, I think that's, you know, I mean, and we've had guys that are continuing to kind of push guys and, you know, things like that. So
we're talking with Coach Tom Donald Blurt, and, you know, Coach, you've seen every type of baseball player under the sun. You go back to your Buchanan coaching days at 2011, 2016 national number one teams were just dude, pro guys, D1 guys. You know, we're going to talk about your son Jason in just a second, but I want to ask what is the difference between a really good toolsy high school baseball player and a pro level Division I ready baseball player?
I think with tools always sort of even out at some point, right? You're going to get to a level. If you're a really toolsy guy in high school, you're going to see other, and you're going to play with other toolsy guys in college. You know, you get a lot of college baseball players that are the guy on their team, and now you get around a bunch of toolsy D1 alpha male kind of thought process guys. The difference is going to be the mental makeup and the mental approach. Those kids that can handle success and failure, right? You get too full of yourself if you really believe I'm this, I'm that, and get too far ahead of yourself handling success, right? It's that kid that can stay grounded and humble and focused and that can handle that 0-for-4 day, that doesn't think his whole self-worth is based on his last four at-bats in his life. That's not the case. It's the kid that can, you know, I know it sounds like, you know, like typical baseball stuff, but it's that guy that can just have that short memory, you know, because baseball is such a game of failure, and everybody knows that. I mean, even during the course of an at-bat, you might get a pitch that's called a strike that you know for you know full well that ball was outside. You know, there's some failure. Boom. Now, how do you handle that? Right away. Can you turn the page right away? And you can say that, you know, if you're playing defense, if you're on the mound, you don't get the pitch. You think you got the pitch. Well, how are you handling that? Is your body language telling everybody how you're feeling and how you're responding to that? Or are you wipe it, go to the next pitch? It literally, you have to do that. And if it's those guys that can handle the failure aspect and the, I think, the success aspect of baseball, that's going to be the separator.
And your son, Jason, was an incredible baseball player, Major League Baseball player, mm-hmm. Went to University of Arizona, third round, I believe, drafted.
Right.
You know, I just had a great conversation with Maddie Campbell, and you guys had a little bit of a conversation walking out, and that was really fun to watch. But, you know, the father-son, the father-daughter, the coaching experience, high-level players, that's a different animal. That's a different mm-hmm. dynamic. You know, did you have to catch yourself at times, you know, being a dad or a coach watching your son play in the diamond? Was that difficult process for you to try to evaluate? Like, you want to be a dad, but you're also the coach?
Yeah, no, that's a tough dynamic, I think, for any coach that is trying to coach one of their own kids. And, it, you know, looking back on it, I was probably hard on him, you know, maybe overly hard on him at times, because I didn't want people to think, oh, he's playing because he's the coach's kid. I mean, even when he was experienced all this success and notoriety and things like that, there were still people that said, well, yeah, no, he's playing because he's the coach's kid. I mean, there were still people out there. It's like, so, you know, you can't chase that ghost and think, oh, I'm going to change everybody's mind. So I think when I finally started to back off him a little bit was when he started receiving all that attention, pro scout attention and pro attention, and it was like, man, he's got a lot on his plate. I don't need to add to it. And he was the one really that handled it really well. He didn't care to whatever that there were 20 scouts watching him hit off a tee prior to a game. And I think that's one of the things that they really liked about him, was also toolsy guy and his talent and things like that, but it was his mental makeup that they appreciated. The fact that he didn't get caught up in, like, he's got to introduce himself to him and he's got to say hi to him. He didn't do any of that, and I didn't coach him up to do that. That was just him, you know. And so I think that was one of the things that they really liked about him as well, is that he didn't get wrapped up in it. Because I've had players, you know, that were draft guys that got wrapped up in a little bit, and you just could see the difference in the approach, you know, and how they handled the situation. So I think he did a really good job with that, and I don't think it was anything that I did, to be honest with you. He knew who he was and who he wanted to be, and, you know, he knew he wanted to go to college, too. He wanted that college experience, and he didn't feel like he was quite ready for pro ball. So it was a good situation for him to be in, you know, but a tough one at the same time. I mean, you live under a microscope, you know, with that. Like, so, but he handled himself really well.
And I remember reading about Jason in the papers and, like, hey, Major League Baseball teams, you draft me out of high school, you're wasting your draft pick. I'm going to Arizona, and it worked out. And you mm-hmm. have a great story. Can you tell everybody out there listening, talking to Tom Donald, about how you were able to catch Jason's first Major League game, and yeah. at least see his first Major League hit?
Yeah, I got home from practice, and his mom and I were listening to the game. It was on the computer. They did that game. I don't know what thing was called, whatever program that was called. And he was taken out. We listened to him. He was in AAA at the time, and he got taken out of the game about the fourth inning. We thought, oh, no.
Did he hurt?
Something happen? You know, get hurt. And so, you know, the announcer saying, yeah, they took Jason Donald out of the game, blah, blah, blah. And we're thinking, well, I don't know. And then we'd heard something about him, the shortstop for the Indians, that may have fractured his forearm. And we kind of looked at each other like, I wonder. So we're still sitting in the dark until he finally called after the game and, you know, said, I got the call. I'm flying to Florida, you know, Tropicana Field. And that was in the day where you could call the airline and say, we need two tickets, you know. And so we called that night and rushed out the story in itself just to get there. I mean, we were pulled over for speeding on the way on the 99 North, and tried to explain it to the highway patrolman, who, ironically, my youngest son is a highway patrolman now, Sammy. But it was just sort of, here's what we're up against. We're trying to get to, you know, San Francisco to catch a flight, and could you please speed things along? I'll do the ticket, but we really can't miss this, because if we miss that,
yeah.
right? So we made the flight, and then we finally landed, you know, in Florida. And then the cab driver was just obeying every speed law that there was. If it was a school district, you know, 25 miles an hour, we were going 20, and I was literally freaking out in the back seat thinking, oh, we didn't even have time to go to the hotel.
Yeah.
So we showed up the field with our suitcases, and they showed us, hey, this is where you check in, families check in for tickets here and things like that. So, you know, and it was just one of those things where we got inside the park and we had missed the BP, the pregame stuff, but the first time we saw him, you know, come out of the dugout and go down the left field line to go play catch like the final time before the game started. You know, just to see his name on the back of a jersey was just, wow. You know, like, man, I remember when you were born, and I remember your first little glove. I didn't even buy his first glove. Some friends of ours, Doyle and Elaine Sewell, were some friends of ours when he was a little dude. They lived in an apartment there in Fresno, and they bought him his first glove. And you know, and then you think about all the Little League stuff you did, and, you know, we didn't do the travel ball thing. That wasn't a thing then, right? And so, you know, and then you think about all the draft stuff, and then you think about all the minor league stuff and the Olympics, you know, and it was just such a journey. And then to see your name on the back of a jersey on a big league jersey is really something else, you know. And then he said he spotted me because he saw I didn't have time to get an Indian set. He goes, Dad, I saw your bald head. I knew you guys were there. You know, so, but that was quite an experience. It really was.
And he got the hit.
And he faces David Price of all guys, right? You know, all-star guy, lefty. And I do remember the at-bat in that he threw him a first-pitch changeup that he swung right through. And it was like, well, of course he's going to. I mean, he's gearing up for the fastball. And can you imagine the adrenaline? You know, the adrenaline. Sorry, that's a hard word for me. You know, coursing through your body. And so it was really smart to throw him a change or whatever, but he ended up going base hit to right. I think he went a 1-1 count, and then I think they tried to go change up again, and he laced a ball to right, and it was just like, whoa, that was big time. And they ended up getting 2 for 3 in the game, which was a lot of fun. And so then from there, and then we flew to Cleveland because that was the third game of the series, and then we got to watch some games right there in Cleveland, which was really cool.
That's amazing. Talking with Coach Tom Donnell, we got about a minute here. I could just hear, yeah, the way you described that and the feelings that you had as a father, how, oh, you looked out there and saw the son, your son, and the name on the back, and all the memories flooded. That's remarkable. That's something you're going to take with mm-hmm. you forever, Coach. Been a great conversation. I want to end with your team right now. Right now it's a big push through
yep.
with league, and then thinking about playoffs. What would it take for this Bullard squad to advance far and to win a Central Section championship?
You know, this is the thing I told the kids the other day. We have to remain focused. We have to be able to learn how to handle success and failure both equally. We have to act like we've been there, done that before. It's like, yes, we won that Easter tournament. It was great, way to go. But let's check the box and move on, right? Let's enjoy it tonight. But, boy, Monday when you come to practice, we're back to work because that's not going to do us anything. We got a big week with Memorial coming up on Wednesday. And so our focus has to get back on track and be who we are and continue to get better. That's the biggest thing. We need some guys to really get hot, and I think we found some pitching depth that's really going to help us, and we're excited about that. And so we're excited about the prospects. We need to run deep into the playoffs. We haven't done that in a while. And we're in a good spot, and we'll continue to grind.
Well, I think the good spot is a tribute to you and your coaching staff and the amount of time that you put in. Tom, always a pleasure to talk to you. Really appreciate you. And
you bet.
Yeah, you're an incredible coach, an incredible guy, and I love our conversation. Thanks for joining me today.
You bet.
All right, coming up after the break, we'll be talking with J.P. Acosta of Buchanan High, incredible baseball player headed to Long Beach State on 1430 ESPN.
Bulldog Hour, every weekday at 2 p.m. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Beautiful day out there, Fresno, California, here at First String Sports. Had a really good conversation with Coach Tom Donnell, Bullard. Man, God, he definitely has it dialed in. He knows what he's doing, and he preaches it, man. Just a great coach and a great guy. If you missed any of the episodes or missed my conversation with Maddie Campbell as well, you could go to the 1430 ESPN Fresno website, go to podcast, go to Central Valley Sports Report. It'll be all right there. Past episodes as well, so go ahead and check that out. Got J.P. Acosta, starting shortstop for Buchanan, four-year player. The MVP of the Fresno Easter Classic, Long Beach State. The Bears are currently 10-7 overall. J.P., what's going on, man?
What's going on? How are we doing? Happy to be here.
You got the Pro Bass Shops hat on.
There you go. Yeah.
Looking spry right now. All right, so Easter. We just had spring break. Clovis was on spring break too, right? I think everybody was on spring break.
Yeah.
Okay,
All of us.
Just want to make sure about that. Yeah. What do you got? What do you got going on during Easter?
Going to Kerman. Gonna go to my grandma's house and go hang out with all the family.
That's today.
That's today and tomorrow. I'm just gonna be in there in Kerman. You know, bunch of food, bunch of family. You know, baseball, all of it. Talk baseball with all the family. Huge baseball family. So, you know, we go back and forth all the time.
And I've seen those videos. You have a very large family, a very large athletic family, baseball loving family. And
oh, yeah.
I've seen videos of you guys doing this mushball.
Mushball games. Yeah.
So who plays in those?
So it's my dad's side of the family, and it's my grandma's side of the family. So the Montavos, and it's all of them. You know, I have cousins that are in college, so they come back when they come back. I got a cousin that goes to FPU, and so I got two of them, Miguel and Isaiah Clark. So, like, just everyone that plays baseball, we're all there, and we do kids versus adults. And so
but you guys aren't kids anymore, though. You guys are, like, almost grown.
No. Well, the rule is if you have a kid, then you're considered an adult. So if you don't have a kid or if you're not married,
got it,
then you're on the kids team. So, you know, we got a couple 20-year-olds. So, I mean, we got a couple heavy hitters on the team. Yeah.
But you got a special day today, right? Is there a mushball tournament, a fundraiser?
Yes. There's a fundraiser for my dad's friend that passed, Paul Valenzuela. He was a baseball player, and he was very great friends with my dad. And I grew up with him coming to the house all the time, talking baseball. You know, showing me a bunch of things because he was fortunate enough to go to college. And you know, he was a coach at Kerman High School when they won a Valley. I believe that he won two Valleys there, if I'm not sure, as a coach with Jay Bruce. And so, growing up in Kerman and him being a big piece of what Kerman baseball has been, just being able to, like, hear a lot of things that he has to say and him always coming over, you know, it was really cool being around him. And, you know, he always made it fun being around him, and he always had a great time with my dad. And so, you know, it was a very hard loss for me and my family, but, this is one way that, you know, we can memorize him and, you know, be able to, you know, raise some money for him and his family.
And the baseball community is always tight, and, you know, you have a huge baseball family. But what do Easter meals look like in your family? Is it crazy? You guys all meet together? What type of food you guys going with? Who's cooking?
It's honestly it gets all over the place sometimes. You got someone that likes to buy food, you know, someone will bring pizzas or they'll bring like some fried chicken. And then you got like my grandma that's going to make the food, make the rice, the beans, you know, all that. And then you got my grandpa that's going to be on the grill cooking chicken, tri-tip, hot dogs, chicken, you know, all of it. And then a couple side dishes here and there, but it's mainly just it's almost like a potluck free for all. You know, everyone's bringing food, and so, I mean, you can never go wrong with, you know, you can never have enough, right?
Absolutely, and it's going to be a beautiful day.
Oh, yeah.
And you had a great tournament in the Fresno Easter Classic. What was working right for you guys? I know you guys lost that game, but, you know, what was working right in those other games and for you especially?
I think it was after that first game, we ended up going to Buchanan High School, and we had a practice before the second game. And we had a pretty stern talking to from Fonts, which was well needed. You know, we might have ran a little bit. Not gonna lie, might have ran a little bit, but you know, it really set a bunch of us straight and like showed a lot of the younger guys like what Buchanan baseball is. You know, Buchanan baseball. You know, we get after it. You know, every day, a really blue collar mentality of baseball and how we work. And so it kind of just like showed a lot of the young guys like this is how we got to approach the game. And you know, the rest of the tournament, we got after it, and we really put our foot down on the pedal, and that's just what we did. And you know, me being the senior leader, I kind of had a role with that and show them like this is what we got to do. So me setting the tone with my at bats or on defense or whatever it was, vocally or, you know, no matter what it was, I just had to set the tone. And, you know, my barrel was rolling that week. And so, you know, I just continued to feel good and keep swinging it. Yeah.
And like I mentioned in the opener, you're a four-year varsity guy. You started as a freshman. How has growing into that leadership role been for you? Is it a difficult process? You know, how have you grown into that role as a leader this year?
It's been I've had a couple ups and downs. You know, being my freshman year, only having about three seniors, you know, obviously the year didn't go as planned because COVID, but it was a very young team then. And so, you know, we didn't really have a huge, huge leader team that you would think with a bunch of seniors. You know, we had Isaac Aon and we had a Christian Lineker. Of course, there were our leaders, but, you know, hearing it from like a bunch of different guys is, you know, helps you become more of a leader. And so, like, as I was going through high school with these guys that were one grade ahead of me, and I had grown up playing baseball with Jet, Max, and Evan Wallace, all those guys, travel ball. So, like, when I eventually got to junior year, their senior year, you know, I had a bunch of leaders, and, you know, everyone all over the team was a leader. And so it was really easy for me to, like, to fall into that. But now it's my senior year, and, you know, not a huge senior staff, but we got a lot of young guys, so it's been a little difficult, you know, so from time to time, but you know, as soon as the team started like following and started like lead, like started listening to what the coaches had to say and like what the rest of the seniors had to say, it became pretty easy.
Yeah. You talk with JP Acosta, you have a young team, and you mentioned too that, you know, there's not a, your class isn't big. How many seniors are on the baseball team?
I believe it's
like five or six, right?
If I'm not mistaken, like eight or nine.
Oh, okay.
Eight or nine, yeah.
So you start off as a second baseman. Did you grow up playing shortstop your whole life?
Yeah,
yeah. Shortstop guy?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to say I come from like a shortstop family. You know, everyone's always in the infield. You know, yeah. My Uncle Jose, my dad was at the shortstop position. His cousin, my Uncle Jesse, he was at shortstop position. And now you got JD, who was in the outfield in high school, and now he's in college and he's playing in the infield. And so, you know, it's kind of just like that position that like I've always wanted to be, you know.
To me, shortstop, I played catcher in men's league, but I played shortstop in high school, and to me it's a perfect position because the angles are perfect.
Yeah.
Your momentum's going forward.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right, go right, left, you know you need to have that range. What's your favorite type of play that you can make? Is it a backhanded throw off your foot? Is it a diving play, the glove side? What do you got?
Yeah, I would have to say anything where I'm getting dirty. I mean, you can't go wrong when you're getting dirty a little bit. You come up and you make a good throw, or even a throw where your first baseman picks you, you know, like something to the sixth hole where I'm diving, or something up the middle where I'm sliding on a leg and spinning around making a good throw. Anything like that gets the crowd going or gets the team some momentum. That's always fun.
How about a flip on a double play?
Oh yeah, those are nice behind the back. You know, anything like that. Nice little bare hand grab from the second baseman.
Has there been a play that you've made in your high school career? Like, oh man, that one felt good. Do you remember one specific play?
Yeah, not too long ago, we were playing up in Bellarmine up north, and there was a runner on second and third, and we're playing on turf, so you know it skips a little bit, and plus it's been raining, so you know the ball's gonna pick up a little bit, and I'll shift it up the middle a little bit, and it was a base hit, two outs, and a ball like almost on the infield on the outfield grass, and I dive for it, and I come up and I spin on one knee, and I throw the guy out from home that was at second base rounding third, and I threw him out at home. Barsotti laid a nice tag on him, and it was pretty cool.
He probably had no idea. Right,
oh, no.
His coach was probably waving him through.
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
There's no way this kid's going to be able to throw me out.
Yeah, yeah. I just dove, spun around, got rid of it as fast as I could, and Barsotti was right there to lay the tag down. It was a great feeling.
And you're switch hitting too.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Did
yeah.
you did you start off hitting left-handed? You're obviously a right-handed thrower playing shortstop, but do you always swing the bat left-handed or what?
I grew up a righty, and I was always hitting righty. I would mess around a couple times hitting lefty. Like there'll be times where I'll be in the cage with my dad hitting righty, and then he'd be like, "Hey, why don't you like flip around and hit some lefty?" So I'd hit some lefty, but I didn't really start taking it seriously until about eighth grade. That's when I started doing it in games and started doing it over the summer, and that's when it became a little bit more comfortable. And I was like, you know what, you know, I think I'm going to roll with this. And so I just, you know, just put in a lot of work to get that lefty swing dialed in. And, you know, I'm happy with where it's at. So.
And I've watched you play baseball since your freshman year. You got some style to you. All right. You got some style. I'm not going to lie. All right. So what do you got? You got something hanging out of your back pocket. You bought your batting gloves. What else you got going on?
You know, I got the blonde hair, you know, that gets a lot of eyes and a lot of people talking, you know, eye black a little bit. I wear some Oakleys with the clear lens in them.
All right.
Yeah.
You wear it while you hit?
No, not while I hit. Okay. I just wear it on the field, you know, just a little style
you
thing.
You put them on your hat too, or are you wearing them?
I wear them all the time. Yeah. So I wear them if I'm not wearing them, then they're in my bag. But yeah, I don't know. My style is just something, you know. You're watching guys in the MLB, you know. It's just like you take a little piece from here, you know, like Fernando Tatis, Lindor, Javier Baez, you know. You kind of just like incorporate into like yourself, and like, you know, like when I'm on the field, you know, I like to feel good, I like to look good, you know, and so.
I think too, JP, is you have a lot of love for the game.
Oh yeah.
Too, right. Like that is that where you're happiest, on the baseball field, playing catch, all that stuff?
Oh yeah. I mean, you can't. I personally can't go wrong being on a baseball field. Like there's no place I'd rather be than taking ground balls, hitting in the cage, being on the field with my boys. I mean, you know, it sucks to say, you know, even when you're losing, you know, you still know that there's another game, there's still another day to play baseball, and you know, that's always a blessing. Yeah.
And we mentioned your family earlier, so. Your cousins,
yeah.
People that don't know. So let's start with your uncles, Jose Ortiz,
yes,
right, and your aunt Annie Ortiz. I know I've known them for the last 5 or 6 years. Great people. So Jose, Major League Baseball player, you know, a legend in Japan.
Yeah.
And I know his three sons live there. So describe what it was growing up in a baseball family. You know, obviously the boys, you know, they live in Japan for a long time, so probably didn't get to see them as much as normal. But describe what it was like, you know, just being with your cousins and your aunts and uncles, and how cool is that, talking baseball and throwing the ball around, doing whatever you guys do.
Yeah, it's awesome knowing that, like, when you're going to go to a family deal, you know, there's always going to be a bat and a glove there. Or whether it's a wiffle ball or a tennis ball, there's always going to be something for there. Someone's going to get into like a heated discussion, but growing up, it was always me and my dad, really, just going out to like Kirkhoff Park and Kerman and taking ground balls. You know, there'd be times where you know, he'd run me, and you know, he'd yell at me, and you know, we got the, you know, maybe had the cops called a couple times, but I mean it was really good. And then I actually had the opportunity to go to Japan when I was younger, to go watch my uncle play over there. And so I was able to like take ground balls on the field and hit in the cage when I was little, and I also got to spend time with my cousins. And then they would come back to Kerman every once in a while over the summer. And so, you know, we're playing baseball all the time. You know, either we're playing baseball or we're, you know, play fighting or whatever it was. But it was always so much fun. You know, being able to talk baseball and being around it is just it's amazing.
Who's got the best in your family? I'm putting you on the spot here. Who's got the best, let's say, the best swing, man? Who's got the smoothest swing?
Smoothest swing, I think I'm going to have to go with the lefty. I might have to go JD. JD's got a pretty smooth lefty swing. You know, I mean, you can't go wrong with the lefty swing. You know, they're all pretty. And so I think JD's got a nice swing, you know, pretty balanced, you know, a lot of power.
Well, Miguel and Alex, right, the other two brothers, they're righty.
Yeah, yeah.
And Uncle Jose, he's a righty.
He's a righty.
Right? And yep. I've seen clips of him, right, hitting bombs. Colorado.
Yeah.
But you're right. Nothing like a beautiful lefty swing.
Yeah.
You get that follow through. The ball just glides.
Yep, it's just natural. It's natural.
So you mentioned a few of your favorite Major League Baseball players. What? Lindor, Tatis. Who are some other dudes that you love?
You know, growing up a Dodger fan, you know, I was watching Manny Ramirez, Hanley Ramirez. He was insane to watch on the field. You know, Andre Ethier, Matt Kemp. You know, just like a bunch of Dodgers legends. You know, even like James Loney,
Matt Kemp.
He was amazing to watch. Yasiel Puig. He was the first. He was like the first guy that I was like, all right, that's my guy right there. Him and you know, we always got like big guys. We got like Josh Reddick. You know, we got guys like that and. You know, Chase Utley, you know, all those guys. And so it was cool being a Dodgers fan and seeing seeing like what type of guys they always got in. You know, it was always someone that was like huge and always in the spotlight. So it was, you know, you can never go wrong.
How'd you celebrate when the Dodgers won the World Series a couple years ago? Were you watching at home with your dad?
It was me and my family. We were all sitting in the living room. We were watching the game, and it was obviously it was the COVID year, so you know we got people saying, you know, oh, it's a COVID year. Like, hey,
they were the best team.
Hey, they
man.
Were the best
they
team.
They were the best team.
Your
that
team
year.
Didn't make it.
That.
Your team didn't make it. I mean, hey, don't bash mine, right? And so we were just in the living room watching the game, and when they got that final out, it was pretty cool because you know they haven't won one since what, 88 or.
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't won one since 88, and so my dad remembers seeing that, and you know, so it was kind of cool to share that moment, knowing that I've been a Dodger fan this long, and so you know, sharing that moment with my family was pretty cool.
I agree. Yep. I'm in the same boat as you. We're 1430 ESPN's a Giants affiliate, but we have a little Dodger talk every once in a while. We're cool with that. What other things do you like to do, JP, besides play baseball? You into video games? You into art or movies? Or what else do you like to do?
I really furthered my faith in the Lord recently. And so, going out to Bible studies with my boys, a couple guys from the team, you know, we go out to church, you know, we have like youth group on Saturdays, you know, we have a youth group on Wednesday nights and Sunday nights and obviously church in the morning on Sunday. And, I've recently started my own Bible study group, Monday nights at 6:30. And I've just been, opening it up for everyone, whoever wants to join. So, I mean, that's something that I really like put a lot of time into.